Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, May 31st, 2026, is by the Reverend Kathy Duhon on the topic of What Trouble Are You In?
I had a Zen story to tell you, and it was shared by one of our ministers, James Ishmael Ford. I seem to have left a piece of paper behind that's Ford's version of it, but I basically know it. It's very tiny. The story is about a Zen master, and I forget his name, but he has a favorite water glass. And his followers at some point ask him, well, you know, what about that favorite water glass, you know? What if it gets broken? And he goes, well, you know, I put it on the table, I put it on the shelf, I know it might get knocked over. I love my favorite water glass, and it is already gone. No attachment. I have a second little story for you to start with. It's called Parents Say the Darndest Things. Some of you remember the show I barely remember from my childhood, Art Linkletter. Yes, kids say the darndest things. Well, this is about parents. We're kind of poised right now between Mother's Day and Father's Day, so I thought this was a cool time to think about this. You know, I sometimes think of the things my parents said, and especially when I'm parenting. But, you know, they had this range of expressiveness. They said lots of kooky things, but also wise, witty. And I'm going to share a few of those gems, and I want you to be thinking in your own minds from your parents or perhaps some parental figure if you have something you'd like to share at the end, a saying that, you know, stayed with you. Now, first, we Duhons must have been rather dense children, since my mother often said this one, if I've told you once, I've told you 16 dozen times. Now, not twice, not a dozen times, not 16 times, but 16 dozen times. And I'll do the math so you don't have to. That's 192 times. I know it can feel like that with actually any communication with anyone. We say something, we say it again, we repeat, we reiterate, we remind, you know. We're trying to communicate how hard that is. Surely not 16 dozen times. Well, maybe. Sometimes now we try to convince my mom to let us do something or to not have to do something, right? We come up with the most incredible logic, yes, and salient facts, and we present them. And, you know, as I mentioned, we must have been rather dense children because she'd always say the same thing. Now, what does that have to do with the price of eggs in China? Now, both my parents said the same phrase to us, to say goodnight or to say goodbye as we were leaving. They said it to us. They said it to their grandchildren. And it was kind of a creative one. It wasn't the most common one that we always say, right? The I love you. Excuse me, I love you. And it wasn't one of those other phrases, don't forget to call. Don't forget to come in by curfew. The usuals. Now, my parents had their own formula phrase. And it was, don't forget who loves you. Don't forget who loves you. Now, somewhere along the line, I got old enough to realize that not all the parents were actually saying that. It was a little different. And I wondered, were my parents just being reticent about ooey-gooey love talk? Because you didn't have to say, I love you. Don't forget who loves you. More recently, I've wondered if they actually weren't trying to say something that we wouldn't forget. Because you kind of forget the trite stuff. I love you just goes into that category of, yeah, ba 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 ba. And, you know, check in a certain way, a certain time. Yeah, you know, you kind of can dismiss it. But who could forget? Don't forget who loves you. It was said by my sister at my dad's funeral. The last darndest thing that parents say, I'll tell you about what I made up when I was parenting. You know, those times you're frustrated with your children when you feel like you've told them the same thing like 16 dozen times. I remember thinking with my first daughter, little Anna, that I could almost throw something. Like when my mother would say, I could just spit. She was a good Southern lady. My mother never did spit. I never did throw anything. But I developed something. I started saying, yeah, I could just throw you out the window. I could just throw you in the trash can. I could just throw you in the toilet. Sometimes one, sometimes all three, sometimes others. I came up with fun stuff. And I never said it with anger. I was trying to relieve frustration that had happened both for me and my little one. And usually we did smile and laugh. I never ended up forgetting who I loved. One evening, quite late, my college-aged brother called my parents from jail. It was the 1980s. He was part of a protest against our U.S. involvement in Central America at a time when we were illegally funding the Contra rebels in Nicaragua. And there's a picture of my brother, Brad. He's wielding a great big old bullhorn. It's not a different thing. It's in the college newspaper in LSU. But what he was arrested for was a sit-in at a congressional office. And our parents needed to get bail money for him to set him free after he spent several hours uncomfortably in that jail. He was in trouble. The kind of trouble that the late Representative John Lewis used to urge folks toward. Get in good trouble, he said. Now, recently, my husband Bruce, he's a starring role today, he said to me, I know I'm trouble. A different kind of trouble was after I picked up something he dropped. As many of you know, he has a lot of arthritis. It's easy for things to slip out of his hands. And, oh, he has tools. He has so many tools. It's a little bit faster for me to do the whatever, picking up, cleaning the mess. So I try to be there. Yeah, he's right. He is trouble. Not the kind of trouble in mine. Most of you have been there with children, spouses, parents, friends. There are bound to be some degree of trouble sometime. Lots of reasons. Not exactly good trouble, not bad trouble either. And if we're honest with ourselves, we absolutely know that we've been trouble for somebody else somewhere along the line. Years ago, Tom Brokaw popularized the naming of those who were youth during World War II, the greatest generation. I recently read that the historian David Nassau is countering that narrative in a relatively new book called The Wounded Generation. Yes, they were heroic, he said, but they were also badly hurt, and it showed. And in sometimes ways that were silent and horrible. They not only had the troubles of that war, whether they were directly involved or witness to the trauma, but they were also the children of the Great Depression. They were the generation that knew deprivation and violence, suffering and sadness. Their lives had so many troubles, from which some of them didn't recover, or some took a long time to recover. When that wounded generation had children of their own, they were sometimes distant. And those children were the generation renowned for rejecting the values of their elders. So there were more troubles. And then, of course, they were the first generation to really experience the twin tsunami diseases of the 20th century, the cancer and the heart disease. And then they got old, and they went on to that epidemic of Alzheimer's disease. You know, not many are left of that wounded and greatest generation, and yet they did raise great kids. They loved them and their grandchildren. we inherited the bravery and the perseverance with which they met their hard troubles. Sometimes out of woundedness comes greatness. When I was fresh out of college, I did a little job based on a grant for a center at Harvard Law School. It was doing research on criminality, and they had been working inside of juvenile detention centers, and they noticed something very interesting. All those kids in trouble, they had a mark. They had none of them done the typical youth things. They hadn't been scouting, they hadn't done music, they hadn't done any sports, you know. And so they were almost like demonstrating the theme of the song, Trouble. That's the title of this sermon, Trouble. From the musical many of us have seen one way or another called The Music Man. Okay. In that show, there's a scam artist who comes to town, and yeah, he's basically fake selling band instruments because he says, oh, there's a new pool hall in town, and man, the kids are going to get in trouble with a capital T, and, you know, they need something to keep them out of trouble. Of course, the problem was he was really the big trouble because, you know, no instruments. He just wanted their money. The Harvard study that I did research for was a follow-up, right, to see if the youth programs, we went to a whole bunch of them, might actually be preventing criminality. We're asking all the adults in these programs various questions, trying to get at how they thought they were getting things through to the kids that kept them out of trouble, since the trouble kids hadn't had these kind of programs. So it was 1981, funny thing. There was a Republican governor and a very conservative governor in Massachusetts, and between the two of them, they were slashing youth programs. The funding cuts were hitting just as we went out to do the research. And so what everybody wanted to talk about, all these adults, was how are we going to keep the kids out of trouble when we can't fund these programs? You can see trouble ahead, bad trouble. When Representative Lewis spoke of getting into good trouble, it was 2018, not that long ago. He was reflecting, though, on a life of his own, of experiencing even violence while making trouble to try to do good. His troubles began in 1963, as he was saying. He said also, Lewis, that the country began such a journey in 1776, right? So we've got 250 years of getting into good trouble, apparently. It's not over for us yet. No, we have work to do in order that the world will be less troubled. I recently read The Correspondent. It's a novel by Virginia Evans, and in it, the main character, Sybil, writes a note with these words about her life of troubles. Who doesn't have a life of troubles? And she wrote this, I have found it to be absolutely astounding. All the trouble living has turned out to be things nobody ever warned me about. I wish someone would have thought to say to me earlier on, Sybil, over and over again, serpents will emerge from the bottom of the sea and grab you by the feet. Well, congregations seem to me to be particularly well poised to help the troubled world, to get into good trouble in order that others will experience less trouble in their lives. It includes that social justice part of what we do, as well as a compassionate service part. We are there to help alleviate hunger, to assist with housing, to help in various causes to address the many troubles that people have, to knock those serpents off the folks' feet. Troubles are not out there only. We experience them inside, illness, divorce, death, job loss, relationship difficulties, mental health issues. The congregation is here for all those troubles that we go through. We can do better, of course. I remember years ago, a friend of mine who was a devoutly religious woman, the first time she came across a 12-step program, it was for the adult children of alcoholics, and she said to me, you know, this is so much more religion than the church I go to. I mean, uh-oh. They're not always, are we the perfect community of support that we aspire to be, but we do aspire to be. And that's kind of part of the great journey. And we do something. We move that needle. In 1948, Mahatma Gandhi said, whenever you're in doubt, or when the self becomes too much with you, apply the following test. Recall the face of the poorest and the most vulnerable person you may have seen and ask yourself if the step you contemplate is going to be of any use to them. Will they gain anything by it? Will it restore them to a control over their own life and destiny? In other words, will it lead to swaraj, freedom for the hungry and the spiritually in need? Then you will find your doubts and yourself melt away. Gandhi noticed what many congregations know, that when we help alleviate the troubles of others, our own troubles melt away. Troubles are always with us, part of our lives. Even little kids seem to resonate with the idea of being in trouble. We got to last weekend have one of my grandchildren and watched Ramona. Boy, what a troublemaker. And Curious George and Dennis the Menace and the Little Rascals. We grown-ups, though, could probably take a cue from those kids. Embrace trouble in some more of a cultural way. You know, the kids do. Not just peer into the future and worry that there'll be plenty more trouble to come. We fear. Of course we fear. We are built to fear. Fear helps keep the animal in us safe, alive. Only we are not merely driven by instincts. Our troubles are multiplied in a troubled world. Our fears seem to be burgeoning. It's not new. Odysseus was on an epic journey filled with troubles, you know, and Job of the Hebrew Scriptures, oh man, he's the epitome of personal suffering and troubles. Only Odysseus does make it home. And Job yells at God. He just takes it out. And God has to kind of answer. And it's not really only that Job is restored, but that Job finds some kind of a faith to continue to manage, even to thrive, despite all those troubles in the world. The Bible is full of a particular instruction, both Hebrew and Christian. Fear not, be not afraid. Judaism and Christianity, of course, are not the only religions that have this wisdom advice. In some sense, the basis of Buddhism is also this declaration that life is suffering, and yet you can let go of it, you know. You can meditate. Probably all religions have their commentary, their advice on the troubles that humans go through. Maybe I'd like to give you a piece from the letters in the Christian scriptures, from 1 John 4:18. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. Another quote from the Bible is that love is stronger than death. Death has got to be the ultimate trouble, right? Maybe this is part of why we gather together religiously, especially as Unitarian Universalists. It's not so much about specific practices, beliefs, but we come together in love. We come together in community, recognizing that troubles are real and many, and that fear and suffering walks among us, but that we are made whole by love. We are made whole by love, which is the strongest force, stronger even than death. Troubles are no match for love. So be it.